You've just tuned into The Blitz, a Pittsburgh Steelers fan podcast presented by SteelCityBlitz.com. Real Steelers talk for hardcore fans. Everyone, thanks for tuning into The Blitz. My name is Matt. That is Mark. We're getting ready to talk some Steelers football here on the show. What is going on, dude?
Shoot, man. I don't know. Apparently, the entire world has been overcome with Mike Tomlin. And did he step and didn't he step? It's the Zapruder film of 2013. It's hilarious. I really, in my heart, I hope he didn't do it intentionally. If he did do it intentionally, I just hope he admits it and let's move on and get this over with, because it's ridiculous. I can't even imagine what this thing would be like if we had won the game Thursday night.
Yep, we've got that to talk about and so much more. That is obviously the dominating story, regardless of what the outcome was, which, by the way, we did lose for anybody that did. 22-20. Yep. Of course, on Thanksgiving Eve, Turkey Day, the Steelers blew a golden opportunity to really grab a stranglehold on that wild card spot. But as it stands right now, they are mathematically still in it, but for all intents and purposes, it's not looking too good, and they're going to need a whole lot of help, and they're pretty much going to have to win out the rest of the way if they want any chance at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there are some crazy scenarios where they literally could get in at 8-8, believe it or not. But I think the best way of doing this is to win all four of these, which is always easier said than done. And Baltimore's going to need to lose at least one. And I believe that would give the Steelers, they would be tied, but the Steelers would have the advantage because of a better interdivision record, I think, if everything breaks right. So, you know, there's that. And, of course, you know, Tennessee is still sitting there as well, and they've got the tiebreaker over the, for us because of the first the opening game win. And, you know, Oakland, I think, is out of it now, so I don't really worry about them too much. And there are some scenarios. The team is still alive, and you know, they can take a big first step this week against Miami, because Miami is sitting at 6-6, and that's one of the teams that they're going to have to jump. And if they don't win this week, then it's pretty much a moot point. It's all done.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, right now they're at 5-7. If they don't win this week, at least, if they drop to 8 losses, I don't care if they're still technically alive or not. We might as well hang it up. Yeah. I mean, there's people talking that say we're the best 5-7 team ever, and I'm like, really? I'm not sure how you can rationalize that, but I guess I can kind of sort of see it in some weird, like, universe somewhere else. I don't know, dude, but based on the way the Steelers are right now after dropping this game, I'm just hoping that they can finish the season and actually field 53 players on game day.
There's so many things to go back to, and obviously almost the complete end of the game. There's so many things that happened from the moment that Le'Veon Bell was literally knocked unconscious, scoring a touchdown, which of course was not allowed because his helmet came off. And that's a whole other topic of conversation. But, you know, because of that, we would end up losing Fernando Velasco to a torn Achilles. And I mean, he's definitely done for the year. And Mike Adams went down as well. I mean, we're looking at Guy Wimper starting at left tackle this weekend. So, you know, hindsight 2020, but is what it is. And you're right, man. I mean, this team is going to be lucky to field a roster that you can really go through 1-53 and say, oh yeah, I know who this guy is. I mean, it'll end about player 25, because you're not going to know the rest of those guys. It's getting that bad right now in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it seems like it's one play after another. Of course, Mike Adams is hurt, but we're not sure exactly how much he's hurt yet. So, the Steelers tried to make some roster moves today, and it almost seems like they're jinxed to the point of the people that they signed don't even want to stay with this team anymore.
yeah, who was it? I can't think of his first name, but Butler, they signed him on Saturday and also picked up Eric Olson, a center. And Butler, within 2 days, already said, I got some personal problems, I'm leaving the team. So it's like, not only can you keep can't keep guys healthy, but you can't even keep guys interested in being on the team. So what in the world is going on?
I'm telling you, dude, I don't get it. I mean, you get signed to an NFL team, you know, you have the chance to maybe play, maybe not, depending on what's going on. But, you know, based on all the issues right now, you know, you got to figure there's a good chance that, you know, Butler would have had a chance to play. But then again, you know, oh, by the way, his name was Rashard Butler.
Rashard, thank you. Thank you.
Yep, offensive tackle. So, yes, it could be Kelvin Beachum starting this week. It could be some yet-to-be-determined player who might end up stepping in.
According to several reports, I know Bob Labriola had something, and I'm not sure if Dale Lally did too, but they said that during practice, Beachum was seen limping through the parking lot and did not look like a person who was expecting to play anything on Sunday. He did not look good at all.
So then maybe it is going to be Guy Whimper after all.
So I think, you know, it's going to be Whimper, and I think they'll stay with Adams, who's a little dinged up, but I think they'll stay with him at that kind of tight end tackle position they've been using him at. So I guess I have a hard time believing that Whimper's a little better on the left than Adams, but what can you say? I mean, this is where we are, and it will really be nothing short of miraculous if this team finds its way into the playoffs.
Yeah, you're right. And at this point, I mean, you wonder if they do manage to limp in. I mean, you know, what's the state of the offensive line going to be? I mean, you know, we have several more games yet with the potential of getting more people injured. God only knows what's going to happen. So, yeah, at this point, let's just talk about the game for a little bit. So, Thanksgiving night, of course, huge game in Baltimore. Everybody's torqued up. It's the biggest rivalry in sports, at least in the NFL, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, started out with the Steelers getting down early, and then, of course, they managed to come back and to get within 2 points there, Dan, before Sanders dropped the potential game-tying two-point conversion, which, you know, I mean, I guess it would have been a tough catch, but still, I mean, come on, dude. I mean, wasn't that a makeable grab in your opinion?
Well, it's a very makeable grab, but I thought it was a nutshell of Emmanuel Sanders' season and maybe his career in Pittsburgh to a certain respect. I mean, you know, he catches some great balls and he drops some balls that he absolutely should catch. I mean, he had one earlier that he should have caught that would have gone for a big play. You know, now I will say this in his defense, only that I don't know why interference wasn't called, because that defensive back did not once, and he didn't even think about looking back to play the ball.
I know.
I mean, he was all over the face of Sanders, and they say that technically face guarding isn't really called anymore, but they do say you have to make a play on the ball, and he made absolutely no attempt to do so. So, you know, I'll say that much for Sanders, but, you know, that said, he still got to catch the ball. It was in his hands. And you know, I just, this whole game to me, and I've harped on this all week, it just goes back to that first opening series for the Steelers where they went run, 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 punt. And immediately the Ravens started bombing us deep and put 7 points on the board right away. The fact that we got away from what we had been doing well the 3 weeks prior, which was come out, no huddle, attack, and throw the ball short, and we didn't do that. And I think that just sent a negative message, not just to Ben, but I think it sent a negative message to the rest of that offense for a good half. I don't think we really recovered until the second half, but I thought that set just a horrible tone.
Well, it was a horrible tone. I mean, the Ravens' MO this year, if nothing else, has been to go deep. I mean, they've been doing it all year. They have some moderate success at it. They know the Steelers secondary, you know, Troy plays up a lot, and you know he's going to try and improvise and cheat on some routes and cheat on some snaps. So you know they have a good chance, especially with, you know, Cortez Allen and Will Gay back there playing that. You know, you're going to connect on some of these, and obviously they did. So I think everybody and their brother knew that they were going to come after us deep, and if they had success early, they were going to keep doing it until we were able to stop it. And when the Steelers came out and went run, 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 punt, I about blew a gasket, because in some sick way, I could kind of see this coming, because you knew that the no huddle and the offense moving up and down the field just wasn't going to last for some horrible reason. And it didn't until they decided to kind of sort of do it in the second half. And then obviously they started moving the ball. scored some points, and pretty much held Baltimore to a bunch of field goals other than the one touchdown. But I don't get the philosophy behind the run, and then on the second drive, wasn't it run as well at first too?
Yes, the first two were. So it was 5 runs to start out the game for the offense. And look, I'm all for trying to establish the run, especially against a team that doesn't statistically do very well against it. But I think you've got to do what you do well, and not try to play against what the defense does or doesn't do well. And I think, look, we didn't exactly set the world on fire in any game this year, or last year for that matter, in terms of running the ball. Do what you're doing well. And until somebody shows that they can stop it, keep doing it. I mean, it's the old classic, Vince Lombardi thing. I can picture him up there at the chalkboard talking about the old Green Bay sweep and how, hey, if we fit 11 on 11, we win. I mean, it's that simple. And I just don't understand why they went away from that. I will struggle to understand that for a long time.
Well, it's just like this whole year is just a head scratcher because, I mean, now I get that Le'Veon Bell had a good showing the first time they played him in Pittsburgh, but the Steelers have just not been a team that sticks with a hot hand. They try and go back to, well, let's try and game plan for this situation and that situation. Well, the game plan in this year hasn't obviously worked at all because we started out 0-4. Then once we started doing some more of the no huddle and some more of the, allowing Ben to improvise and, mm-hmm. Just doing different things than what obviously didn't work for the first month. Then we started winning some games. We got to a point where we were a legitimate contender for a wild card. And now we go into this game, we start out running, we get behind, we have to fight our way back, we lose all types of people in this game, and all it ends up being for nothing. Yeah. Because, now we're sitting on the outside looking in where we pretty much have to win regardless of what, the math stats mm-hmm. will tell you. I don't get, and it just reaffirms, I believe Ben said as well that, well, maybe we should have went to the no huddle earlier or done some different things. Well, duh. I don't understand the logic in this whole team at all this year. I know we've said it 100 times if we've said it once, that this team makes you scratch your head because just when you think they start doing something, they go and do something totally different, and then they'll try and rationalize it as, situational football or, the stats indicated that this wasn't working, so we had to try that. And you just wonder how many times this team is going to beat their head against a wall trying to do something that doesn't work before they just say, look, the season is what it is. Let's just go out and just let Ben play and see what happens. Because I don't know, dude. I guess I'm so frustrated watching this team because they had a chance to win in spite of themselves again on last Thursday, and they just blew it again. And now just here we are, wondering what's going to happen, wondering who's going to be on this field. Is our coach going to be on the sidelines next week? Is it going to be fine? It's just everything that could have went wrong in this game would have been a little bit easier to deal with had we at least won and been in a position to hold on to that wild card. Now we don't even have that.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I can't disagree with anything you said. Here's my question, and I'll pose this to you. Is Todd Haley back next year if this team doesn't make the playoffs?
I don't know if he's back even if they do make the playoffs. Question that we've been asking on Twitter, and like every Steeler fan on the planet has been talking about this all year long because nobody likes Todd Haley. You have a few of your homers who will come out there on Twitter and say, oh, well, the Steelers just completed a pass, let's fire Haley.
Right.
it's a lot bigger than just the whole fire Haley thing. And
yes.
I mean, this will be, the Steelers are not a team that will usually take losing sitting down, especially not back-to-back seasons. And I don't care, to me 8-8 is a losing season, at least to me it is. And to the Steelers, it should be too. So if they don't make the playoffs this year, Tomlin's job is secure. He's not going anywhere. The Rooneys are not going to fire him. I mean, I would be shocked beyond belief if Tomlin is not back. So we can table that talk no matter what people mm-hmm. say. But I would say right now it's probably a 50-50 shot if he's back or not. And I would like to lean towards him not being back. But, the way the Rooneys are, sometimes they do things that just make you scratch your head. So I'm going to say no. But with a preface of it could happen. How about that?
Yeah. Hey, you're right on. And I think that's where most of us are. I mean, I know from chatting with folks on Twitter and stuff that, and there's some people that whose knowledge I really respect out there that are convinced he'll be back regardless. And somebody is going to have to be a scapegoat. And I don't think it can be the special teams coach again this year. Somebody is going to have to go. Now, whether or not, who knows? For all we know, Dick LeBeau may be ready to be done and go play golf the rest of his life, you know, and that would serve as a scapegoat type thing for a lot of people, even though it doesn't have anything to do with the offense, but at least it would be a major move by the team. You know, but you alluded to it. The Rooneys are all about stability, and they don't want to look like there's any panic going on. So I'm right with you. I think there's every possibility he will be back. And you know, as far as what that means for next year, I don't really know, because we're going to see a lot of different personnel on both sides of the ball because of free agency and the cap situation and potentially the draft. So I don't know. I wanted to ask you. You and I hadn't chatted about it much lately, but you know, I think that's where we are. We think he'll be gone, but we won't be surprised if he's back.
That's pretty much the way it is. I mean, but you're right. I think somebody has to be the scapegoat this year. If the Steelers don't win out and finish at least 9-7 and have some kind of momentum, as you always like to say, heading into next season, somebody other than the special teams guy is going to have to be, you know, the guy that gets the axe. And, you know, I don't think the Rooneys have the balls, so to speak, to actually fire Dick LeBeau. I mean, I seriously don't think they can actually do it. I think LeBeau, you know, like they say every year, he pretty much is on a 1-year contract. And if he wants to come back, they're like, come on back, dude. So, yeah, LeBeau will leave when he's ready to leave. And then, of course, at this point, Butler would take over then, seemingly, as his replacement, whenever that happens to be. But, you know, I just – you're right. They are all about stability. Tomlin's job is fine. You know, and I don't even think you can rationalize cutting a bunch of, you know, assistant coaches. It's got to be a higher up, at least one of them. So, but, you know, just – The Steelers went through some lean years when Carr was there too. And, you know, he changed coordinators now and then he'll change a coach here and there. But, you know, this team, every time I have them figured out this year, I don't have them figured out because something happens and then it just goes south again. So yeah,
join the freaking club. Let me put you on the spot one more time here, though. It'll be Ask Matt Knight. If it comes out, if Tomlin admits that what he did on purpose. He's lost his train of thought. He overreacted. He was frustrated, and he stepped out onto the field. Would the Rooneys have justification to fire him for that?
Well, sure. I mean, okay, yeah. Let's say, could they be justified in firing him from like an NFL type standpoint? Or I mean, absolutely. They could, because, I mean, apparently the NFL just reminded all the coaches about this past week about stepping out on the field. you know, obviously they don't listen because we saw Tom Coughlin doing it the other night just the same way.
I've seen so many guys do it.
Well, yeah. Exactly. They all do it. You're right. It's just that most times you're not focused on the coach on the sidelines. You're focused on the field. It just so happened, you know, that Tomlin was right beside the play as it was unfolding and the camera was right on those three guys. So it was pretty much inevitable that you were going to see him. And I'll tell you, quite honestly, I would be shocked beyond belief if Tomlin actually did it on purpose. I mean, I don't think he's that type of guy. I can see him saying, and he has said as much right now, that, hey, you know, I got a little too close. I wasn't quite, you know, paying attention to where the guy was in relation to where I was. I was watching a game on a Jumbotron and didn't judge it right, or he veered the way I wasn't expecting or whatever. You know, he pretty much admitted that now. And, you know, maybe he gets a fine. Yeah, he probably should get a fine. But then we get into a whole scenario of everybody should get a fine because they all do it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think he'll get a fine. I think it's going to be pretty substantial. But this discussion of a suspension and taking away
a draft pick,
I think, you know, it would prove what I've said for the last several years, that the Steelers are kind of the poster children for being whipped on by Goodell, if that were to happen. But I just can't see it. I mean, everything that happened with Spygate and with Bountygate and those things were proven as fact. I just can't imagine us losing anything more than say $100,000 or $200,000.
Yeah, you're right, and I'm sure the league has already sent out faxes to all the teams out there saying, watch what you're doing, stay off the sidelines and all that. And, I mean, you know, as soon as I saw that happen on TV, I was immediately taken back to Cowher back, you know,
absolutely.
Against Jacksonville that time. And I thought, oh, my God, here we go again. And then of course there was references to Jason Kidd and everybody else, so everything kind of came out, with ice on the court and all that, so.
And there's precedent for this. I mean, it was just a few years ago that the strength coach for the Jets ran out and tripped the Dolphins player, and he that team wasn't docked a draft choice, and I don't believe any coaches were suspended. I think he had to stay off the sidelines for the rest of the year, but I mean, that's not going to happen with Tomlin. So I don't know. I really just hope the league makes a decision tomorrow, because if not, I think social media and media in general is just going to explode with this stuff today. I mean, it was priceless. The more and more different video angle shots that
I
came
know,
out,
right?
it was Zapruder all over again. It was just hilarious. And have you seen any of the these memes with Tomlin, like being inserted into Michael Jackson's Thriller
Oh
and
my
stuff?
God, I saw that.
I love it. I don't know who's doing those, but they're fantastic.
Oh, dude, they're hysterical. Well, the media is going to run with it no matter what. They obviously are. So all we can really hope for is that, the NFL makes a decision, give him a fine, call it a day, and then just deal with it. But I mean, I guess to summarize the question, the Steelers, the Rooneys would have justification to fire Tomlin if they actually, like, if the NFL lowered the boom and, like, took away a draft pick and fined them, like, $500,000, or, possibly, had awarded, the Ravens a touchdown on that one that could have altered the game at the time. Or I think if the punishment had been worse or ends up being worse, they could fire him, but they never will. We know they're not going to just get rid of Tomlin like that, but I guess technically, yes, they could.
Yeah, I don't think so either, and that it's a rash decision if they were, but you would have to question, why a coach would do something like that. Going back to what you mentioned with Cowher against Jacksonville, I mean, we all remember seeing it, but it's not like he went out onto the field and threatened to do it. I mean, it was a knee-jerk reaction while he stood on the sidelines, and this was a little bit different because he was darn close to the field and certainly in that other area. Moving along, do we have any clarification as to whether or not Le'Veon Bell will play this week?
I have not heard any clarification other than I think I sent you a couple emails yesterday when we were chatting back and forth. But I tell you, dude, just when we saw that hit, I mean, he just looked. I mean, Le'Veon's bell was rung 9 ways to Sunday. I mean, that man had no idea where he was when he got up. There was no way. I mean, it was like a double collision. Helmet went flying. Dude hit his head on the ground. Damn near caught a knee in the head as well, I think, for the Ravens player after the fact. So yeah, I mean, he got up. Clearly, he was knocked silly. I think he sent out a couple of tweets since then. So I'm going to bank on him not playing this week, honestly. And this and it ended up being, Dwyer, out there probably right now. Felix, I guess, as the 1-2 combo. I think at this point, I would be shocked if he was out there. But there's been no official word that I know of yet.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am too. And you have to wonder, does the league get involved? And because, like you watching that live, I don't recall seeing too many other things quite as scary as that in professional football. Certainly I do remember watching the Theismann injury, but that wasn't one where he lost consciousness. I mean, I saw the helmet go flying into the end zone, and I saw basically what amounted to a lifeless body go into the ground. And at first I thought, okay, he's out. But then when I saw Heath Miller grab his helmet and try to kind of shield the camera away, I thought something else might be really wrong here. And thankfully we got word pretty quick that he was just knocked out and there was nothing more serious than that. But it just the whole incident brought up so many questions. I mean, first of all, the rule about the helmetless player. I mean, how on earth do you take a TD away from a guy that gets decked like that and falls into the end zone unconscious? I get the rule, I understand the premise of it, but I think that's got to be relooked at. And they were also talking about whether Bell should have been penalized, much like Dwyer was earlier this year for using the crown of his helmet. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, crap, two Baltimore players came in with their heads down. I mean, there were so many little things going on in that one play. It was just incredible.
Well, yeah, and I tell you that was the longest, like 1.5 yards I think I've ever seen in a game. I mean, first we score, then we don't. Then we score again, then we don't. Then Bell's on the ground lifeless, and then we scored. Well, no, we didn't score again.
Yeah.
And then we scored, and then we missed a two-point. I mean, it was just a nightmare. It took like 20 minutes to play that 1.5 yards, I think, or something.
And
but,
not to mention the injuries that happened after.
Oh, my God, yeah. It was like the walking wounded. Every play that we thought we scored, we had somebody else limp off the field.
Yeah, well.
I just don't know, but I tell you, I think I'm okay. I'm kind of okay with the rule as it is being dead when a player loses his helmet. But at the same time, I mean, when you're in a scoring opportunity like that, I mean, that to me presents a gray area of, you know, this guy, he held on to the ball, you know, or, you know, if he holds on to the ball and, you know, he has control when he crosses the, when the ball crosses the plane, you know, it's hard for me to justify taking that touchdown away from him.
Yeah. And maybe it's something that they can look at in terms of, you know, if this happens when a player is crossing the goal line or inside the five or something and happens to somehow get in the end zone, you know, is there an exception to the rule? Because this was designed for a guy that, you know, the helmet came off and now he's in the open field running.
Right. Exactly.
And they don't want people piling on him, grabbing him, doing whatever. And that's totally understandable. But in this case, I mean, it's so quick to happen and nobody blew the whistle. There was no time to blow a whistle because the helmet came off. The play was done. I mean, the helmet came off, he's laying in the end zone. It's done, you know? So I, like I said, so many different angles and stuff and, you know, thankfully he's okay. I guess that's the most important thing right now at this point.
Yeah. And I mean, I would imagine based on, you know, from what we've heard so far that maybe he'll still get to play this year yet, but I kind of be shocked if he played this week. You know, I guess we'll have to see. I'm sure he's already going through the battery of tests that the team has to give him. So, you know, and we'll hear word this late, later on this week for sure either way. But right now I'm counting on Dwyer being the main guy with Felix out there. Other than that, the game, obviously it sucked. Because we lost, you know. So let's rather than break down the game a whole lot, because I mean, we've kind of done that here and all here as we've been going through.
Yeah.
Who is your offensive MVP for this year so far?
Well, you know, you have to go with Antonio Brown. He's leading the league in receptions. I think he's second in yardage. I think he's fourth in the league in overall total yards when you combine his punt returning. And, you know, there's an argument to be made for Ben. I think the early turnover issues that he had kind of cost him in that. So I would definitely say Brown and then Ben. And you know what? I would not argue one bit if somebody said to me, you know, what about Fernando Velasco? I couldn't argue with that. You know, the guy
that's my pick. Other than Brown, that is my guy.
The guy has been solid. He's not spectacular. He gets beat just like every other player in the league occasionally does. But I mean, you talk about finding a guy off the street, you know, and replacing an all pro. He's been fantastic. And I don't know if they realize just how sad it is what's happened to him with this Achilles thing.
Oh, it's terrible, dude. I mean, I can argue the point that Velasco might be a better center for this offensive line than Pouncey is right now.
You wouldn't be the only one.
Yeah. I mean, just based on his play style, his size, you know, the way, you know, I mean, he's just a big cog in that machine he takes up a lot of space. He's strong, he's powerful. Maybe he's not the quickest guy,
right?
You know, maybe, you know, you have to do some things differently, but if you're going to be a team that's going to max protect and try and keep your quarterback up, I can seriously argue the point that Velasco might be a better option at center for this team. And maybe, you know, Marquise goes out to play guard or something. I mean, that's just something to bat around in the offseason, but yeah, I can absolutely see that. I think Brown is obviously everybody's guy.
Yeah.
I think he'll win it this year going away, even when the season's over.
Mm-hmm.
Velasco's kind of my, you know, like my second hand, you know, maybe him and Heath. But yeah, I mean, just I think people definitely don't realize how important he was to the Steelers winning the games that we did. Him, you know, finding a guy sitting in church, getting a call saying, hey, come out and play football. And then, oh my God, here he is starting. So yeah, it's just terrible. I mean, you know, there's no guarantee when he's going to come back from that. But, you know, hopefully he does come back for these camp next year. Defensive side here, we'll wrap it up here a little bit.
Sure.
I'm going to give you a name of my defensive MVP for this year that you would have never heard me say in a million years right now. And it's not Troy Polamalu, obviously.
No, that's not who I'm thinking either.
No. What would you say if I told you that Jason Worlds is my guy on defense right now?
I can't argue.
Only because you know how much I rag on this guy. I mean, I absolutely cannot stand Jason
Oh, I
Worlds.
know, and that's, you know,
But
that it's amazing that you've made this. Have you been to see Dr. Phil this week? Is that what
I'm
it is?
telling you,
You're having a
the
come to Jesus
dude has
thing?
just, I mean, especially with Woodley being hurt, who's always hurt,
Yep.
I can seriously make an argument. Now, obviously, Troy's going to get it. I mean, when a team picks their defensive MVP, it's going to be somebody like Troy. It always is. Or, some kind of glam name, I guess, if we want to go that route. But I can seriously make a point to a guy like Hayward or Jason Worlds as being the guy who's really stepped up and done everything that's been asked of him this year and then some.
Well, I see where you're going, and I don't disagree with it. I think Worlds, you know, I think he's just about caught up with Woodley in terms of total snaps now, and obviously
Right.
his numbers are a little bit better, you know, in terms of sacks, pressures, tackles, and whatnot. But to me, the guy that deserves it is Timmons. I think he's been spectacular. He plays sideline to sideline. He's on the field most of the time. You know, they take the rookie Vince Williams comes off when they go nickel and dime. You know, he's constantly making hits. He's constantly, you know, making good plays. He's not spectacular, but he would be my guy. And you know, Troy's had some good moments as well. I mean, I think he's enjoying being healthy again, and that's a big part of it. And I couldn't argue much with that. But and you know what? If Worlds, you know, I think he's going to play again this week. There's been no word on Woodley, and I take that to mean he's probably still in the sweatsuit. If he continues to play well, gets maybe a sack a game here on out, why couldn't he be your MVP? I mean,
It's funny, because I mean, as much as I rag on this guy, now obviously, let's see, he's got through 12 games played, he's got 49 tackles, 6 sacks, and 2 forced fumbles. So it's not too awful bad, so far. And that's Worlds' stats, by the way.
Well,
So,
and I think Woodley's sitting on 34 tackles,
right?
and about the same amount of snaps, give or take a handful. So, you know, is he spectacular? No, he's not. But he's really enjoyable to watch. Not only rush the passer, but he's really come along against the run. It's really interesting to kind of watch him, you know, squat down and wait for the run to come his way and force it inside or try to beat a contain and keep it from getting outside. I mean, he really has come a long way. And now, you know, the question besides could he be the MVP is how much do you pay this kid? And will he keep this up once he gets a new deal? You know, that's a big roll of the dice.
Well, you know what? And that's probably the million-dollar question right there is how much is he going to want next year? I mean, let's assume that he finishes strong throughout the rest of the year and has a few more sacks, some other big stats or whatever. Obviously, Woodley's done nothing since his contract signing except to get hurt and underachieve and show up out of shape. So, and Worlds, I mean, obviously, I guess if it came down between Timmons and Worlds, I'd probably give it to Timmons too because he's the better all-around player.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's back in coverage. He's calling the plays and defense and all this and that. So,
Right.
but I think the Steelers are going to have a big thing to decide here next year because Jarvis Jones has not lived up to expectations yet, but I think he still will. And then you've got Woodley making a big fat check who's going to have to restructure. And then you've got Worlds. I mean, is he going to be your new guy? Because he's not going to come back to sit on the bench now and be behind Woodley and Jarvis Jones. He's going to
That's
want to start.
exactly right, and he's going to listen to offers and go where he can go.
Yep, so I mean, and you're right. The big thing is, let's say the Steelers give him 25, 30 million next year, and then does he end up pulling a Woodley and getting hurt again, like he did in the past, or just not playing well? So that's kind of the million-dollar question.
Yeah, it really is.
It really is, and it's something that's interesting. But I tell you, I give the guy all the props in the world because his run stopping has really gotten a lot better this year. I mean, last year we used to bitch and carry on because he could not set the edge to save his life. Just got run over.
You're right. He's improved, and he's still kind of a whirling dervish too on special teams when he's on there. And, you know, he's doing all the right things. He's doing all the things he needs to do if he wants to get that contract, you know, whether it's in Pittsburgh or somewhere else. And it's almost hard not to talk about next year because you just kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop on this season. And it hasn't yet. And obviously we don't want it to. We'd love to see this team. You know, I'm going up to Green Bay here in 3 weeks to watch them up there. And of course, you know, I might be watching Bruce Gradkowski for all I know at that point, but, you know, it's so hard because you want to get to the next phase, but we got to get through this phase first.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I've been looking ahead all year long, and then this team just keeps finding a way to staying in it just enough to keep you interested. And then you know, then something happens where they lose like they did last week, and you're like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
So, you know, they won, you know, three in a row. Now we're back to, you know, the loss again. Now can they get back on track and start out with Miami this week? So before we wrap it up, do they beat Miami this week? Realistically, yes or no, based on everything you know now with injuries and whatnot?
I think they'll find a way. It's a home game. The crowd's going to be amped to boo Mike Wallace. You know, I think the big issue is can Ike Taylor rebound from some pretty awful games he's had recently? And let's face it, that whole secondary has been burned deep recently. So, you know, and Wallace has had two pretty good games after having just a horrible year leading into them. But I think the offense will do enough. They'll find creative ways, as they have been, to get the ball out of Ben's hands quickly and keep him protected. I mean, there's going to be issues. You know there is. You lose the center, the guy that calls all the signs and change-ups on the line and the protections and everything else. You're going to have some issues, but I think they'll find a way. Tannehill's usually good for one or two interceptions a game, and I think we get out of this one with a win, and that sets up just a monster Sunday night game with Cincinnati.
Boy, doesn't it? Holy crap, man. That one looms big if they can pull this one out of here. But, yeah, I'm anxious to see Ike Taylor on Mike Wallace because you know the Dolphins are gonna try that matchup at least a few times, because regardless of Tannehill throwing interceptions, if Ike's back there, he ain't going to catch him anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Right. No, you're dead right, man. I mean, it's like I told Didi on the trip today. I said even if Ike gets beat, there's always a possibility that Wallace will drop the pass anyway, so.
That's exactly right.
We can hold out a little bit of hope.
Yeah, I tell you, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I think they're going to win this one too. Obviously, the protection is scary right now because we don't know who's going to be protecting Ben and how long they're going to last. So, you know, that's a concern. But, I mean, apples to apples, oranges to oranges, whatever you want to call it, you know, with both teams stacking up with, you know, equal starters on either side, my nod is with the Steelers on this one all the way. I think they know that their backs are against the wall, but they really can't afford to lose anymore, you know, regardless of the injury situation. So I'm going to say they're going to pull this one out. I don't know that it'll be a blowout, but I'm sure it'll be entertaining nonetheless, because I'm sure Mike Wallace will do some talking this week if he hasn't already.
He's made a few comments, but nothing that I would say is bulletin board material, but the week is young.
Yeah, exactly. Give him time, because you know he's bound to say something. So, but with that, I think we will wrap it up. Obviously, it's a big week. There's lots to follow the hero on Steel City Blitz. Obviously, the Mike Tomlin situation, the injuries with Bell, the offensive line, the news, you know, just the game news coming up with, you know, Mike Wallace coming back to town, and can the Steelers rebound? So stay tuned to the blog. Mark is putting out tons of articles. Of course, our new guy, Chris, is also putting out some stuff. We are keeping it up to date with the podcast on there as well, so be sure and check it out. And I believe that is all I have, dude. You got anything else?
That is it. That is it. I might have a little bit of news coming up later in the month, but I'll keep that quiet for now.
Cool. I am excited. You know, I kind of sort of maybe know what it is, but I don't, so I'm not saying anything.
It has nothing to do with getting rich, I can tell you that.
Oh, well, then I don't want to hear it anyway, so. But all right, but with that, we will wrap it up. So thanks, everyone, for listening to The Blitz, presented by SteelCityBlitz.com. Thanks for listening to The Blitz, a Pittsburgh Steelers fan podcast presented by SteelCityBlitz.com. Be sure and follow Mark on Twitter at SteelDad and Matt at Retro Rock City. If you'd like to be on the show or submit a question for us to discuss, just drop us a line on the website, www.steelcityblitz.com, and use the Contact Us link on the top right of the page, or you can just drop us a tweet. Steel City Blitz is an independent fan site not affiliated with the Pittsburgh Steelers or the National Football League. Our opinions are our own.